This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. On this episode, backed by popular demand, he is Lou DiBella, the veteran boxing promoter, former HBO Sports boxing executive. He joins me and we talk about everything that's going on in boxing today, from how the pandemic has impacted his business as a smaller boxing promoter, to how big fights can happen during this whole no crowds era, to some of the things going on with some of his fighters, whether it's Amanda Serrano, Tevin Farmer, and even Sergio Martinez, the former great who is making a comeback at some point later this year. So stick around for that. Always entertaining with Lou DiBella. A little bit later on, Teofimo Lopez, the 135-pound title holder, he gives us his updates on the Vasily Lomachenko negotiations, how he's training during the pandemic, and if he's willing to stick around post-Lomachenko at lightweight to take on a Tank Davis or even a Ryan Garcia. So stick around for that with Teofimo Lopez. Reminder, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It is the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Lou DiBella. All right, joining me on the pod right now, he is a true friend of the program. And because of this pandemic, we can't be face-to-face yelling at each other, which probably works out well for me. He is Lou DiBella, president of DiBella Entertainment, longtime HBO boxing executive, and all-around good guy. Hall of Famer, by the way. Lou, I know you must be disappointed, Lou. The pandemic temporarily put off your induction into the Boxing Hall of Fame, but it'll happen. It'll happen at some point soon.
No, I'm just grateful to be in. I'll deal with the delay. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into anything else, you know, DiBella Entertainment is a small business, and you are affected by this pandemic as much as anyone, with boxing being put on hold and, you know, the money flow not coming in. I mean, how has this affected your business and your ability to, you know, think in the long term?
Well, I have three primary businesses. I also have a production company, and I've been able to mess around a little bit in the production company, not make money, but at least play around. I have three businesses basically closed down. You know, I've been able to place some fighters, and I'm working real hard because the fighters need to eat to try to get them on some of these bubble situations that exist. I've been able to make some fights with my guys as opponents, but I can't afford to do a Broadway boxing or a UFC Fight Pass show with no gate revenue. The TV revenue is not healthy enough to support the testing, the purses, and the course and events. So I can't do anything. In New York City and in New York State, the gyms are still closed. So boxing's really shut down here. I also own two minor league baseball teams. I'm the managing partner of two teams, the Richmond Flying Squirrels, San Francisco Giants, AA team, and Montgomery Biscuits, Tampa Rays, AA team. 2020 seasons, totally canceled. So no revenue coming in until spring of 2021. God willing, we have a vaccine by then, and we can open up to the public. So it's beyond just suffering. It's trying to figure out how to keep things alive. I mean, I've had to, on the baseball business, I've laid off about 75 people, like furloughed, you know, loads of people, a lot of them my friends. I mean, we need to continue to be visible in the community and serving the community during this, but we have no money coming in. It's been trying, you know, but it is what it is, man. I ain't going to complain. People have it worse than we do.
Club shows, small shows, they're the lifeblood of boxing. It's where some of these young guys get their early opportunities, and you do it as well as anyone in boxing. I mean, it's just the revenue from the live gate is just what drives those shows, right? The inability to have that live gate just makes them impossible?
Makes it impossible. And additionally, look, right now they're starting to pop up with some local shows here and there. But I don't want to be too critical, but they're desperados a little bit because they're taking temperatures. It's sort of similar to the states that only take an eye test and a blood test. the same, those same states, some of them are running shows and they take your temperature. And if you don't have a fever, you can fight. I'm not going to operate that way. And the only way I would do a show right now is responsibly. And that means, you know, the kind of bubble you're in Orlando right now, the bubble that Top Rank created, the bubble that they're creating for Showtime at the Mohegan Sun, phenomenally expensive. You have to rent the property. You have to be able to test regularly. A lot of your fights are going to fall out. I mean, the economics of a small show just simply don't work. So it's not only me, but everybody that promotes, you know, grassroots boxing. Look, I have a regular series televised. I mean, but I can't go. And it just is what it is. It's going to be, and I've spoken to a lot of my friends in the venue businesses. And honestly, the arenas and theaters aren't really gearing up to reopen so quickly.
How concerned are you for your business in the long term because of what's happened over the last 4 months and the uncertainty about when things could get back to normal?
I'm concerned. You know, I have a lot of fighters under contract for an independent promoter. I don't have a exclusive streaming deal or TV deal, particularly one where I have deals, but I can't utilize them because the TV money doesn't cover the nut. I'm concerned. I'm more concerned for the fighters and I work with, and particularly the women. I mean, other, if you're not named, if you're a woman and you're not named Katie or Clarissa or Michaela right now, like 99.999% of the women are just sort of screwed. The men don't have enough platform right now. There aren't enough slots to take care of them in this environment. So I'm concerned about the women. I'm not that. I mean, I'll get through this. You know, the other thing is, like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I gave an interview, I was on a podcast, and you know me, I tend to be honest. Like, I was honest, and then the next thing I was reading an article on boxing scene, someone saying I'm in fear of my life and career and that I'm likely to be out of the business. No, but I am being philosophical. I'm not 35 anymore. You know, I turned 60 during the shit. And I'm not like, you know, I'm not going to wind up like Bob or Don in 87 in the saddle. That's not happening with me. So, you know, I'm going to be philosophical about things. I'm going to get myself through this. I'm going to do the best I can for my fighters and for my company. I'm confident that I'll get through this. I think the entire sports business and live event business is going to be suffering for a foreseeable period of time. I don't think we're going to have things exactly back to where they were, maybe ever. But in terms of getting to some semblance of normalcy, I think it's pretty clear that's not happening until there's a vaccine. And then, you know, how did all of this affect people's habits? Are people still going to be willing, for example, boxing tickets have always been extraordinarily expensive. A little bit less so for the kind of club shows I promote with regularity, but the bigger shows I was doing at the Barclays Center and the bigger shows I promoted in my career, the tickets are phenomenally expensive. Are people going to go back to paying $2,000 and $3,000 for a ringside seat to sit elbow to elbow? You know, time will tell. You know, interestingly, I think part of the reason why boxing is in such an interesting place right now is we were heading for an adjustment anyway. And you and I had talked about that in some of the podcasts we'd done a year or two ago, where I prognosticated, I think correctly, I mean, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist, that there was a bubble of crazy spending. The results didn't appear to be justifying the level of expense for anybody who was spending crazy, and that we were likely to be hitting a period of adjustment. Interestingly, I think we were hitting that period literally right as the pandemic laid its ugly, you know, self on us. And this has just exacerbated things and brought things about more quickly. You know, boxing's really in a situation of change, you know, where there's going to be an adjustment not only to sports in the world of COVID-19, but an adjustment to a new paradigm where funny money is not going to be spent, and that the performance of an event, the popularity of an athlete, is actually going to determine what he gets paid. So, you know, it's going to be a very interesting time when we are, you know, and now we're starting to get back to some regularity. Showtime put out a schedule. Fox is going to put out a schedule. DAZN's getting back to some shows in August. It's going to be interesting to see where things go the next year or two.
You know, you mentioned you had some fighters on as opponents in some of these shows that have already taken place. Top Rank just finished a 6-7 week stretch of doing fights twice a week in Las Vegas. What were your impressions of what Top Rank did and how they came back?
You know, I never believed anyone was, you know, Eddie was out there. Look, Eddie's like a P.T. Barnum. Eddie's the, in a lot of ways, Eddie's the new Don King. I mean, Eddie's a carnival barker. He's a good looking guy. He's got great, great, you know, fast of, you know, his mouth is quick and he's facile and he's, you know, he's a P.T. Barnum-esque kind of guy. We're going to come back and only with the biggest fights. And no, you're not. And I said this all along. No, you're not. And everyone sort of knew it. And what Top Rank did was they were the first one back. So they're the first one that came back with product that was more affordable and allowed them more flexibility with all the other money that had to be spent on testing and everything else. And also, you don't want to bring back your superstar and then run a 50% risk his fight doesn't happen. So, like, you know, they were disadvantaged a little bit by being the first one out. And maybe if we were in a different world where someone in boxing, there was enough money behind boxing that someone was going to go out there and say, yeah, we're doing our first event, so we're going to spend a gazillion dollars and money be damned. But we weren't in a money be damned situation. We're in more of an, like I said, a period of readjustment economically. So I was impressed to a degree. I think that they attempted to do everything in a responsible, healthy way. I think that they were able not to cancel a single show despite losing about 40% of their fights, 30 to 40% of their fights. I think you're seeing Showtime just took a hit and lost their main event the Saturday night. I think they learned some things watching Top Rank operate. And by not being first, they brought in a bunch of substitute opponents, believing, okay, they lost a third to 40%. We're not being any less, you know, stringent. So we're likely to lose 30 to 40%. And they had fighters in waiting to step in. Now, they have a good show Saturday night. It's the quality of the boxing. Tremaine Williams against the now is fighting that kid in the main event. That should be a competitive fight. Tremaine's a good fighter, even though they had him as an insurance policy. It's not a big show, but it should be a decent boxing show. And I think they did a very strong job of substitution because they did what they should have done. Watch what Top Rank was doing, see the good things they're doing, but also see maybe where you think you can, based on what you're watching and the data you're gaining from watching those shows, you know, making adjustments. And that's what they did. And I think that that's going to be an advantage the people coming back later are going to have.
No, I think you're, you know, right. I think you're right about having a substitute opponent or having someone training inside the bubble is almost a necessary thing at this point. I mean, you have to assume that for every fight, you know, there's a strong possibility you could lose one of the top fighters. You have to have somebody ready, willing, and able to go. I think that's an adjustment everybody needs to make moving forward on all these shows. The one thing I was curious about, you know, as I mentioned at the top, you're, you know, a former television program at HBO as well. There was a lot of excitement about what the numbers could be for boxing based on what we saw on the early returns on what UFC did. They did some extraordinary numbers on some of their early shows on ESPN and the ESPN pay-per-view. It didn't translate that much in boxing. What do you read into that?
A bunch of things. Okay, but one of them I read into it, to be honest, is I think our hardcore fan base, I don't want to say it's shrinking, but I think it's limited. And one of the interesting things about the ratings for the ESPN fights were everyone was looking at them in a vacuum and comparing them to UFC. You know, look, UFC came back first. They came back bigger. Dana is a no fear kind of guy. It was like balls to the wall, best stuff we can put out here. We're going to put quality programming out there. No one at the point when they came out with their bigger shows, no one had been able to bet on anything for 3 or 4 months. And the numbers were enormous. And I also think they have a terrific marketing machine and they're run by one entity. They're basically a near, I don't want to say monopoly legally, but they're in terms of market power, they're like a monopoly. And boxing is completely diffused in terms of any kind of administration or management. you know, we already have four and five champions in every weight class. And then when you're going down to the level below a championship level a little bit, and you're just trying to make decent fights, the fights are sort of fungible. The stuff ESPN was putting on wasn't that different from the stuff I was putting on Broadway Boxing, with one or two exceptions. So I think that the numbers you saw from the ESPN ratings, if you'd looked at the ratings of FS1 before the pandemic hit, they were in that ballpark, similar to what ESPN just did. If you were looking at the ratings that Showtime was doing, and they didn't have their numbers weren't super last year. They had a little bit of an off year. I think that they may even be better with what's coming. But their numbers for show boxes and for their smaller championship boxings were also in that 300,000-400,000 people range. You look at Wilder Fury 1, what did it do in that 300,000 range? You look at most of the pay-per-views in the last 5 years, and other than Wilder Fury 2, which had a ridiculous amount of promotion behind it from two mega networks, what were those pay-per-views doing? They were doing in that neighborhood of 250,000-400,000 buys. Well, is there a common thread here? And maybe the common thread is that our hardcore base that will watch everything has faded to that sort of the level. We clearly didn't capture the imagination of regular sports fans. We clearly didn't cross over with our early shows to casuals. That's something we got to work on. I mean, we got to take a look at that. I mean, we can't argue, you know, when you look at the history of boxing over the last 100 years, we were the sport of kings. We were number one in that literally century sort of, if you're looking at a 100-year period, we early in the 20th century, we were still arguably the number one sport in America. You know, right now we're in that other sort of category when you go down the listing of sports. It says a little bit about the way that the perception of our sport. I don't think, you know, I think that you're seeing the floor. You know what I mean? The numbers you're seeing right now for us are the floor. When you get out there with a Spence Garcia on pay-per-view, when you get out there with a Teofimo and Lomachenko, particularly if that winds up on ESPN itself, when Canelo comes back, if he comes back in a real fight against the Callum Smith kind of guy, there will be more attention and there will be a larger base of people interested.
But then was this a wasted opportunity then? Because when they come back with those big fights that you're talking about, the competition is going to be much stiffer than it is right now.
You can clearly argue that it was a wasted opportunity, right? I mean, you can argue that because if this pandemic hit and this was 3 years ago and DAZN was in the beginning of its burst of spending, right? Not in the end, DAZN could have cleaned up right now. They could have come back, thrown on some huge stuff, thrown out. This would have been the time to put out $20, $30 million, not $300 million, but $20, $30 million, you know, $5 or $6 million for a couple of super shows that preceded everyone else. Would have been a great opportunity, but DAZN wasn't in that economic situation at that moment. Neither was Top Rank and ESPN. You know, a PBC similar. Look, I think Heyman and the PBC guys. Al's always been very thoughtful and risk averse. He's careful, and I think that he waited. He watched, and then he now has acted and begun to come back. So it doesn't surprise me. I didn't expect anybody to grab the opportunity because grabbing the opportunity meant a lost leader, meant losing some money for a couple of months in order to gather the attention of the sports world. Would that have been good for the boxing industry? Yeah, but who's looking out for the boxing industry? Who runs the boxing industry? We have no league. We have no commissioner. We have no authority. We have four ratings organizations that are maybe more a part of the problem than they are of the solution. And some are way better than others of those four. I don't want to put them all in one, like, you know, one basket. I'd say that...
No, we can rate them in terms of shittiness. They're plenty shitty all around.
No, they're plenty shitty all around, but there's one that's shittier than the rest.
Yes.
And, you know, but Yeah, but they're pretty shitty all around. But they, but here's what I really do believe. They are not part of the solution. They have been part of a problem. A rational reboot of boxing wouldn't involve those four organizations, honestly. Maybe in the beginning as there's a transition, but if the sport ever took over, it's, you know, if there was ever a roll-up of boxing so that there was a commissioner, there was a structure, right? You wouldn't have the WBA, the WBO, the WBC, and the IBF, at least in their present, you know, structures. So, you know, I think boxing's eternal. I've said this a million times. People will always fight for other people's entertainment. I also think we are literally, we predated every sport on earth, and there's more, you know, theatrical, you know, it's more of a theatrical nature, more poetry, you know, more storylines. I mean, boxing is, there's a reason why so many movies, books, songs, everything have, you know, so much art is created around boxing because, you know, there is a lot of meat to the bone. But as a business, we're in a very interesting and challenging and transformative time right now.
Yeah, you know, for the last couple of years, there's been a lot of money in boxing, and that's certainly great for the fighters. Networks want to be in the boxing business.
Yeah, but it's, you know what?
Let me finish. Like, it's been, networks want to be in the boxing business because it's relatively cheap programming compared to, you know, paying for rights fees for other sports. But, you know, it's created a bunch of separate leagues. I mean, can boxing actually get out of the rut that it's in, or expand the way it needs to, it with so many broadcast partners that are out there? Is it even possible?
Not with the present paradigm. I mean, look, I've said this to the guys that run DAZN and who I like and I respect. I mean, Skipper's a terrific sports executive, and I respect the guys that runs its own, and you know, but starting a programming service with an exclusive contract, I'm not going to get into who it was with even, but I think the exclusivity of the ESPN deal, the exclusivity of the DAZN deals, the exclusivity of PBC, you know, and Al's a control freak. He's a brilliant guy, one of the smartest guys I've ever known. And I still call him my friend. You know, we have an interesting relationship over 20 years, but I do still consider him a friend, and we do still speak. But he's a control freak, and he would be the first to admit it if he ever talked to anybody. Those three avenues make it difficult for things to cross over and for the biggest fights to happen. You know, the amount of money that was spent over the last 3 or 4 years benefited a number of fighters, but particularly the ones that were already wealthy, like the ones that were already on the top of the ladder. It helped some other people. Some other fighters got the benefit of deals they never would have been able to make again, and never were able to make, you know, preceding that. But that money, that balloon of insanity is over. And why is it over? It's over because, honestly, DAZN didn't get a couple of billion dollars worth of results for the couple of billion dollars worth of spending in boxing. ESPN, like, I think they're okay. It's cheap programming. And you know, Aram can deliver a regular product. But the ratings haven't been extraordinary. The pay-per-view performances haven't been extraordinary. The performance of even Wilder Fury 2, which I guess did people say around 800,000 homes or something like that, given the amount, $50 million of value of promotion between ESPN and Fox, it was still sort of shockingly low. There's a reason for that. By not having an open marketplace, which would really sort of force the biggest and best fights to happen. If nobody had their exclusive multi-gazillion dollar deal where they can play in their own backyard without playing with everybody else, then you would see more of the best product. You know, when I look back, you know, you mentioned I got into the Hall of Fame. I think that's as likely as much of that was for my years at HBO and my success as a programmer at HBO as it was for my 20 years and success as a promoter. I think they both factored in. And then in that 11-year period I worked at HBO, we had no exclusive deals. And frankly, when Showtime made an exclusive deal with King in an attempt to beat us, or at least Jay Larkin was the head of Showtime Sports back then. Mark Greenberg was running the company, and they thought King had Chavez, King had Tyson, and that they could actually, you know, close that gap to HBO by an exclusivity with Don. we destroyed them after the, like it was worse for them after the exclusive deal, because I had everybody else open to me and everybody willing basically to do and make the fights I mandated. I want to see this fight. I think it's big. Seth Abraham and I believe this is the biggest fight. You know, we had fights with Bob. There was a period of time for like 7 or 8 months where Bob was like, you know, you're not the matchmakers. You're not the promoter. If you don't want to buy it, don't buy it. Okay, we didn't buy it. Guess what? 10 months later, Bob was sitting at a table with us making some of the biggest fights of the 1990s, you know, because we had no choice. And I think these exclusive deals have actually killed boxing. I think if you look at the descent of HBO Sports, because, I mean, literally HBO had half a century as the television leader in boxing. I mean, over 40 years as a TV leader in boxing. You could almost time the HBO Sports demise to a decision to give an exclusivity to Golden Boy. And the quality of HBO products started to diminish. And by the way, it's not like a hit on any one promoter. It's just the exclusivity makes no sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you imagine, like, you had baseball, but the National League is exclusive to one network and the American League is exclusive to the other? Or the National League East is exclusive to Turner, but the, you know, and then how do you have playoffs? How do you do anything? I mean, you know, exclusivity has been a real, real problem. And I also think that there's a double-edged sword to the tsunami of money that was spent over the last 3 or 4 years, because it honestly didn't pay off. It didn't pay off for the people spending it, for none of them. Mm-hmm. And right now, there aren't streaming services and networks. Believe me, because I've tried to talk to everybody. And, you know, I had years as a TV executive, so my Rolodex is different than the average boxing promoter. You know, I mean, I know the TV guys who have been in the business a long time because I was a TV guy. And they're not lining up behind ESPN, PBC, and, you know, or Fox/Showtime and DAZN right now to jump into boxing. They believe, probably correctly, too much money and attention has been paid to boxing over the last 3 or 4 years, and they're watching the results. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no accident. I do think, I mean, people, like, a lot of people think that, you know, I've gotten to know Dana a little bit over the years, and, like, you know, we have different politics and different stuff, but I have great respect for him, and he's a charge forward kind of guy, very decisive, and you know, he comes to a conclusion, he makes a decision, and he sticks with it, and you know, I admire that. And when a couple of years ago, when he was really making noise about looking at boxing and wanting to get into it, like, I know that was true. I think that watching everything that's happened in the marketplace now, I think there's a reason why his interest in moving into that boxing world, he doesn't talk about that so much anymore.
Don't you think, Lou, don't you think that Dana's, you know, disinterest at this point in getting into boxing, because you're right, I think he was serious about it for a while, and then he just looked at the numbers that didn't make sense. Like, he's able to pull off bigger shows because his margins are much wider, right? Like, he's not going to make as much money doing some of these Fight Island shows and non-crowd shows, but he's still making a healthy sum because the costs are under control in the UFC, at least far more than they're under control in boxing.
Well, the UFC is far more under his control and the control of the Fertittas and the people, his co-owners, than the people running UFC, a lot of whom are very, very talented, by the way, but they have actual decision-making authority and they have sort of control over their entire universe. And he looked at boxing and the irrationality of all the decision-making, the money spent, and then the fractured nature of the sport. Somewhat, you know, I don't want to be critical of anybody, okay? But take DAZN. You had a guy in Europe with a phenomenal amount of money and a very tremendous record of success as a businessman in Blavodnik. Is that Len? Blavodnik, yeah. And a tremendously successful businessman if you look at his portfolio and whatever. The money that was spent in boxing in that first few years of DAZN was enough money to literally can to take boxing and roll it up. That a billion plus dollars could have bought Top Rank and all likelihood PBC. Probably not Eddie, but at the time, remember, Eddie was brought in to run boxing and for DAZN in the US, but was the biggest promoter in UK already and one of the biggest in the world. I don't know that Eddie would have been rolled in either, but you probably could have made a deal easily outside of the Matchroom territories. That money literally could have wrapped boxing up into a situation where DAZN might have had a de facto UFC situation. You know, I mean, you spending all the money on, you know, doing these things. And also, they were saddled with a couple of exclusive deals very early on, and then they couldn't open up to everybody else.
Do you believe, before you continue on that thought, we know Top Rank has been for sale for a while. That's been public. Bob Arum has talked about it. Do you believe Al Haymon would sell PBC?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it'd be more complicated because if he was going to still be involved and not step out totally, he's not the kind of guy that cedes control very, very well. He likes to run his own thing. It's probably one of the reasons why he's been so successful. He's 65 years old. I mean, the guy's a very smart guy. He's 65 years old. And he's he really is a super smart man. And if you're looking at, he sees what's gone on. It's been a very difficult road for him, too. I mean, he got out there, got venture capital money, and it was very hard. I mean, people were prognosticating his demise. That's probably because they don't know Al well enough. But he made moves, he adjusted, and PBC probably right now, in a lot of ways, because they have the most eyeballs, maybe is an advantage situation for the foreseeable future, I think. I don't think he's out there necessarily the same way that people knew that Top Rank was, looking for suitors. But I certainly think that if someone came in with deep enough pockets, that a deal could have been made of some kind. But I actually think there needs to be, for boxing to really elevate in a hugely substantial way, there needs to be something tantamount to a reboot. You know, we got to look at the present structure and paradigm simply doesn't work. And you know, there's that argument, you know, particularly when you have three different avenues. So like you have that PBC avenue, the DAZN avenue, the ESPN avenue. These having like six champions and interim champions and franchise champions and gold champions and the regular champion versus the super champion. So literally there's 16, 15 champions in each weight class. That actually serves the fucked up universe we're now in, because Eddie needs his belts and Al needs his belts and Arum needs his belts. And by the way, forget about the ratings organizations now, because smaller promoters and managers and fighters that are like right now, if you're not with one of the spenders, you know, one of the streaming services or networks, that's bleeding money in order to create programming for a bubble, you can't generate money for the ratings organization. So where does a ratings organization want to give control of its belt to? The people controlling the purse strings. Doesn't make them bad people. Those are businesses too. The BA is a business. The BC, the IBF, the W, they're businesses. So, you know, they need to survive also. So The shitty system that dominates boxing, the system that selects the judges and has them associated with ratings organizations, the rankings that don't look similar in any of the four organizations, where guys are ranked number one and two of the organizations aren't even on the top 15 of the other two. The whole system favors the fucked up business model that now governs in boxing. The fucked up business model isn't working. It just empirically, not Lou's opinion, it's not working. It's just not working. So, you know, what are we going to do to change it, if anything? The next few years are going to tell.
So you mentioned as a longtime programmer over at HBO, like as you look at the post-pandemic landscape, let's say that you had an opportunity to run boxing programming at any of the networks that are doing it. I'm talking Fox, Showtime, ESPN, and DAZN. And you, for yourself, were looking to pick the best opportunity to mold boxing and to be in that position for as long as possible. Which network or service are you most bullish on as maybe having staying power over the long term?
ESPN being like perceiving themselves as the industry-wide leader in sports television and obviously probably more of a portfolio of programming than everybody else, I don't think they're going to go away. I don't think boxing is going to disappear as part of ESPN's portfolio anytime soon. But clearly UFC's kicked its ass. And I think the people in the executive offices at ESPN believe that UFC is far more important to them in the future than boxing is. So I think even if they're going to remain where they are, I don't think it's going to be as a dominant player forever. DAZN's got a lot of issues. I mean, it's a streaming service that's attempting to build a brand. Just by definition, they got hurt worse by this than almost anybody. And that's, again, part of it through no fault of anybody. And, you know, part of it, they were beginning to make adjustments to their business right before this hit. So it just was a terrible time for them have to go through this. I mean, if I was banking on one of the existing like avenues, it probably would be PBC because of Fox Network and the, you know, free TV and the number of eyeballs. The rate, you know, you could talk about rating percentages being lower, but the sheer number of eyeballs that have seen that watch the PBC shows, particularly the bigger ones, are it's a larger, you know, it's more people. So I think, like I said earlier, I think they're advantaged, at least as we go through this difficult period. You know, they're mixing. They never got away from pay-per-views. So they don't have to get back into it. So, you know, they're putting on some big pay-per-views. That's their way of offering some major programming without taking the economic hit we talked about earlier. How are those pay-per-views going to do? We're going to find out. I expect that a couple of them will do fine. You know, they still certainly generate more money. I believe probably generate more money than they would have been able to get from the network to put it on a non-pay-per-view basis. I don't think that anybody's in the best shape right now for the long term. I think that somebody's got to sort of change their orientation and say, I want to get into boxing. Here's my budget. I'm an open shop. Bring me the best fights. Now, at the moment, can that happen? Not really. I mean, ESPN's locked in with Top Rank for a number of years to come. Al has multiple years left, I think, with PBC and at least, you know, more than a year left with Showtime. So there's multi-years there, too. And DAZN, I don't think DAZN's going anywhere right now.
Let me drill down that for a second, though. What would you do if you had, you know, control of the DAZN program? Because you're right, there's some financial issues right now. The pandemic, you know, significantly decreases the subscriber base, you know, for obvious reasons. That being said, you are armed with some of the biggest stars in boxing. Canelo, the biggest star in boxing. Anthony Joshua, you can argue the biggest global star in boxing. Ryan Garcia, I think we'd all agree, has the most potential to be the next superstar in boxing. Not talking talent, talking crossover appeal. So you do have, you know, the cupboard isn't bare if you're your DAZN programming. What do you do there?
I think that what you're going to see, first of all, I think DAZN's going to be concentrating more on global app than anything else. I think that they were heading that way anyway, but they have a global product. I think that's one of the reasons why when you're hearing names thrown around for Canelo, the majority of the names have been from the UK. You know, I think that there's going to be a lot of concentration toward the global app. That means in other markets, particularly, but concentration on acquiring other programming that's strong outside of boxing and the combat sports. I don't think the global DAZN app is going to be as combat sports centric as DAZN USA has been in recent years. You know, they need to have programming that resonates. And that's been the issue from the beginning. I think they made one gigantic misstep. I'm not criticizing Eddie Hearn or Matchroom, but the gigantic misstep was thinking that any one promoter, particularly one from outside of the United States, could come in and just, you know, with a big wallet, take over the industry. It doesn't work that way. You know, I think had there were two ways, alternatively, when they were swimming in money, that they should have gone. One of them was a deal with nobody, and it would be to come. And I don't want to say me, but I do think I'm probably the best boxing television programmer that's ever done it. But there are other people that are pretty good too, and I'm not the only person out there that's capable of doing it. But I would have gone to somebody that really knew the industry, a top player, brought in a director of boxing, said, here's my boxing budget, go out and among everybody else that's out there, go and make the biggest deal you can. Make the biggest fights you can. Give me a slate of programming. This is what I want. I want X number of pay-per-view equivalent type of fights. I want X number of you know. I would have done something strategically. I mean, I don't think there was much done strategically. You know, I mean, even little things, you know, you could have controlled women's boxing, literally owned the entire category for probably $10 million in a year, owned everything, the whole thing. That would have been a good investment in 2010 in hindsight had DAZN made that. When you look at the fact that they spent $10 million buying a Chavez Danny Jacobs fight card. Do you know what I mean? So like there were the roll up, if they would have the other way in the beginning, as a hire a programmer, be open to the whole world, let that programmer run your combat sports, or conversely, go out there and roll up a fucking industry. Because you know what? If they had that $1 billion been used to roll up boxing, you would have had great fight after great fight after great fight after great fight. And that's a locomotive. One promoter in an exclusive situation when there are two other avenues isn't a locomotive for subscribership. You know, I think DAZN still has some tremendous talent. Golden Boy has some up and coming guys. I think Ryan Garcia is a future star, as you said. Canelo is the biggest star in boxing still. You know, he's still DAZN. What they have to do right now is they have to make programming that resonates, and the shows that they do have to count. You know, I'm not talking about the couple of things that they're doing the rest of the summer, because I think what they're doing the rest of the summer, similar to what everybody else is doing, is putting yourself back on the map and saying, we're back, we're coming back. Like, we're not dead, we're coming back. You know, but it's not meant to resonate. Like, the stuff there, you don't see a marketing machine right now behind these couple of shows DAZN's doing in the next month. Or they did last weekend. And I think that it's more to show that they can come back, and Golden Boy and Eddie are trying to get some activity back going, and they need to. But when things get back to some semblance of normal, I think they have to make programming that resonates, and they have to be able to gather attention. And that attention has to spread beyond the hardcore combat sports fan. It's got to go to casuals. It's got to go to general sports fans. It's why Canelo has to fight a real fight, not a reduced money, easy fight, in my view. I mean, I don't run the thing, but if they asked my opinion, or they were listening to me, here's my opinion. I think you need to fight, you know, one of the better fights you can make. You know, in my mind, the Callum Smith fight seems to make a lot of sense. Also, it makes a lot of sense because the app is going to be available in the UK. If indeed it would only be available on the app and not on Sky Sports, that's potentially a big marketing tool for the UK. Canelo fighting a Brit champion, that could be a locomotive of some kind in terms of trying to drive awareness and numbers in the UK. They're now selling a global app. So that makes sense to me. Might be one of the reasons why they're trying to make the Luke Campbell, you know, Ryan Garcia fight. You know, the saleability of the fight in the UK, as well as the attractiveness of the fight in the US. So I think you may see more decisions that are with an eye toward the global nature of that their app. You know, I think that they're going to be they also, by the way, people got to remember too, we come at everything from the United States kind of point of view. Like, how's it doing? How's DAZN doing in the US? Okay. Well, in Germany, DAZN has, you know, Bundesliga, yes, the soccer, and they're, you know, they're pretty successful there. Japan, the DAZN's had some great success. So I think you're going to see them concentrating and continuing to build the markets they're already strong in, looking for additional worldwide markets where the app can resonate. You know, one of the things I said recently in a conversation I had with Joe Markovsky, who I'm assuming, by the way, is a Polish ancestry given his blonde hair and his last name. You know, Poland, for example, as a territory, they're huge boxing fans. They support Polish fighters to a great extent. So, you know, star fighters fighting, you know, like there could be a market there to build the global app, the sales of the app in Poland by making some matchups that are, you know, of top Polish fighters fighting, you know, other guys. You know, I mean, I think you're going to see some more strategy. I think it's going to be a very different orientation. They're in a completely different place than they were 3 years ago. You know, you get out there and they were throwing out lost leader money. Well, you're a brilliant guy and you lose a couple of billion dollars. You ain't throwing out lost leader money anymore. Now you want results. And I think you're going to see more strategy. And, you know, Skipper is a good sports executive. He understands the whole portfolio. You know, he obviously had one of the biggest in the world when he ran ESPN. I think he's going to be out there concentrating more on the world and the global nature of his business. I don't expect them to disappear from boxing in the U.S. I think the Zone will continue to be a force. I think they have enough of a base to continue to be a force. I think they got to just put their best, you know, foot in front of each other. Look, if they were in a position now that they were willing to spend more money, now would still be a time to say, okay, not a tremendous amount of money, but a drop for what they've spent. But if they took something like $25 million and said, I'm putting $25 million into a fund and I'm opening that up for the rest of the boxing industry, everybody not named Bob, Al, Eddie, and Golden Boy. And that money is going to be for everybody else. Prove to me, show me what you can do. Give me a dozen shows and show me what you can do for that money open to the rest of the universe. I would argue that the rest of us out there would probably be dying to get a little piece of that pie because we're all dying right now on the vine economically. And we would put our guys at great risk every moment. You would see, you know, if you like, I'm talking about everybody else because everybody else is in the same boat, which frankly is a lot of us in a boat without an engine, you know? And that would be a great move for the Zone, but I don't think that the Zone right now is playing with, I don't know. I mean, I don't think they feel compelled to put more money into boxing at the moment.
All right, let me drill down on a couple things specific to you before I let you go. There was a lot of bad blood in the back and forth between Amanda Serrano and her team, Katie Taylor and her team. Katie's obviously moved on to fight a rematch with Delphine Persone. Eddie was understandably upset about it to a degree, about how that whole fight fell apart. Do you believe that fight is revivable at some point, either later this year or early next year?
Probably not later this year, early next year, knowing knowing Katie's management as well as I do and knowing Eddie as well as I do. Also seeing the move toward Persone and then the investment Eddie's making in Cecilia, who's fighting Jessica, who's a smaller girl, like more of a 40-pounder than a 47-pounder. I have a feeling that they're probably aiming toward a Cecilia fight or the winner of Cecilia and McCaskill against Katie. And also there was just a lot of bad blood. You know, I mean, do I think the fights are, of course the fight's revivable. I mean, you know, there aren't a lot of huge money fights in women's boxing, you know, even on the horizon. And that's still one of them. So is it revivable? Yeah, I doubt that it's revivable in the next 18 months or so.
Okay. One of the bigger fights that could be on the calendar this year is a fight that you're still a part of. I mean, Tevin Farmer in a rematch against Jojo Diaz. There was some back and forth there with Jojo apparently looking for a way to not fight Tevin Farmer next and defend his belt against the mandatory challenger. Where does that fight stand? I mean, I see Jojo Diaz on social media constantly saying, I want the big fights. The first fight with Tevin was pretty good. I think the rematch would have some kind of interest. I mean, where does that fight stand?
I think that the fight will happen. You know, there's a contract for it, and they're going to have to honor that contract. I also think if the fight happens in the next 6 months, JoJo will not be stripped and lose his title. I think even the ruling that made the guy the mandatory, I think the fight doesn't have to happen for 7 or 8 months. or so, I don't know how much time, but it's a significant period of time. So there's plenty of time to schedule the Tevin fight. Look, I think part of it is JoJo beat Tevin. He may not have had a deal on paper for how much money he was going to get paid for the rematch. So even though Tevin, we had a deal for some certain in a contract, you know, and Golden Boy, clearly they've been very, you know, upfront in saying, yes, we committed JoJo to an immediate rematch. They haven't denied that. They've said that. So the fight has to happen. They have to get on the same page with their fighter. And I know from personal experience that you often have those bumps in the road, and, you know, and then people sit down and realize, okay, inevitably I have to fight Tevin Farmer. Now let's get this deal done. I think as soon as there's a date certain, and right now my understanding is that there's not any date certain for US DAZN shows beyond the August show at the moment, which is understandable, by the way. I think as soon as there's a date certain, a deal will get done.
So you believe, despite all the back and forth, that that fight can... I mean, what happens if JoJo says, I'm not going to fight him? I mean, you can't necessarily make a guy get into the ring with somebody.
Then they're going to have to do something else to satisfy Tevin Farmer if JoJo just absolutely refuses to fight him. But I don't see that happening. I think JoJo's a... I mean, I like JoJo. I think he's a real fighter. You know, I guys have different ways of arguing with people and different ways of discussing things. I shouldn't even say necessarily arguing with people. You know, maybe they thought it was some form of negotiation, sending a letter to the IBF saying that they wanted to fight their mandatory. I think they'll sort it out with Golden Boy, and there'll be a fight before the year is over, is my guess. I mean, assuming boxing continues a normal schedule through the end of the year, I think you'd see the fight hopefully before the end of the year.
All right, lastly, this is something I don't think you guys have even talked about off the air either, but Sergio Martinez is allegedly coming back. And he's coming back. You were his promoter for most of his career, certainly during
I still consider him one of my good friends.
Okay, give me your reaction to a mid-40s Sergio Martinez coming back, and are you going to be involved in it in any way?
He invited me to be involved in it. You know, he said to me, I'm coming back. I know you don't approve. I mean, look, we're close friends. I love that guy. And most loyal fighter I've ever worked with, and one of the most remarkable athletes I've ever known. You know, one of the things, you know, and maybe this also affects his willingness to come back in a foolish way. I mean, when he came to the U.S. in the beginning and first started to establish his star power, he already was mostly a one-legged fighter. Like, by the time he got here, he had one really bad leg. And that was a problem in every fight he had, which, by the way, when you look at the entirety of what he accomplished, makes it all the more remarkable. But if I was him, I would probably continue to act, continue to do stand-up comedy. He's a superstar in two countries. I mean, in terms of popularity in Spain and in Argentina. I don't think it's about the money. I don't. I mean, I don't think he's hurting at all. He's very wise with his money. He had some very smart, good friends that invested his money, you know, helped him invest his money very, very intelligently. You know, when he called me, he said, I know you don't want me to do this. I said, I don't. And he said, well, you know, we had a discussion many times. Like, it wasn't even worth repeating the reasons. But, you know, I mean, health and safety, I'd rather see him just let his period. Like, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. You know, stay in retirement and just let the time tick, and you'll be, you know, you just got on the ballot and you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, you know. But he's like, I got to do this for me. I'm bored. I'm still a fighter. I still have it in my, it's still in my blood. I can't help it. Like, if you want to be involved, I'm welcoming you to be involved. If you don't want to be involved, please send me a release. And I'd really like you as my friend to wish me the best and tell me you're behind me. And I am. I mean, I want to, if he's going to come back, I want to see him win. If he's going to come back, I want to see him stay healthy. That's what I want more than anything. Do I approve? It's not for me to approve. It's not my life. I'm not going to be involved. I declined. He knows how I feel. Doesn't change how much I love him. Doesn't change the fact that I'm going to be rooting for him. I'm not a fighter. You know, that line, one of the things in Rocky Balboa that I got to play with that script a little bit. Sly let me play with that script a little bit when we were doing the movie. And one of the lines that really resonated with me was when he had this exchange with his son, and his son is like, you're crazy, you're fucking middle-aged, what are you coming back for? And the father basically says, fighters fight. Fighters fight. That's what they know how to do. That's who they are. I don't think he perceives himself as an actor or a comedian or he obviously has movie star looks. He obviously is charismatic and he hasn't had any problem earning money outside of the boxing ring. But he's a fighter, and that's how he perceives himself. That's who he thinks he is. You know, I got to tell you, there is, I know that Tyson and Roy are both doing this for money, but I could tell you, I know both of them very, very well. Mike's not bullshitting you when he says, I still want to get in there and hit somebody. It's still in my blood. It's still part of who I am. It's a missing part of me. I've been feeling, yeah, as much as I feel like whole, you know, I've gotten my life together and I'm in a better place than I've been previously. I miss fighting. I'm a fighter. And Roy, you know, Roy stayed a long time. Roy kept fighting for a long, long time. Roy's had a very hard time divorcing himself from boxing. It's who he is. I think there's a common thread in all of it. It's not just about the money for any of them. And I can promise you, by the way, that Sergio's comeback's not a big money, at least the first fight's not a big money situation at all. But I don't get it. It's puzzling to me. But I do know that fighters fight, and that's who they are. That's who they are, how they identify themselves. That's what, you know, that's what makes their heart beat.
I don't know what this says about boxing, Lou, but if Sergio comes back and picks up a couple of low-level wins and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. picks up a low-level win, there will be a weird, morbid fascination with making the rematch between those two guys. I don't understand it, but I think you and I could both agree that people would actually probably watch that.
Look, I agree with you. And on that same vein, right, I did an interview yesterday. And it was with a boxing interview as it was a TV, like, media kind of interview. And it was someone asking me to prognosticate what pay-per-view I thought would do the most buys in the fall out of what's been announced so far. And while I don't think Tyson and Roy Jones is going to be a mega event, do I think it could do more buys than anything else that's been announced so far on pay-per-view for the fall? Probably. I mean, I would think it's going to do around 500,000 people. And there's nothing else on the schedule of boxing pay-per-view in the fall that I think is going to do 500,000 people. So think about the fact that that exhibition with headgear and pillow gloves between a 51-year-old man and a 55-year-old man is going to do more pay-per-view, and it's in that same category as Chavez. You know, the biggest names in boxing are the ones that are in retirement or semi-retirement. It's why the threat of Floyd's still the biggest star in boxing. It's why the threat of Floyd returning, you know, still creates a buzz of articles and conversations.
Yeah, that's a separate topic altogether about how the young stars in boxing haven't captured the attention the way the older stars in boxing have. Lou, always appreciate it, man. I feel like we should do these more virtually because we don't yell at each other quite so much when we're not in the same room, but it's always interesting nonetheless, man. Thanks for joining me.
I also think the pandemic has mellowed me further, by the way.
Possibly, but...
I think I'm a little more philosophical right now.
That too, Lou, is temporary.
I actually hope so. Good seeing you, Chris. Enjoy the bubble, baby.
All right, Lou. Coming up next, lightweight title holder Teofimo Lopez. All right, joining me on the show now, he is the IBF 135-pound champion, anxiously awaiting his next fight. Teofimo Lopez joins the show. What's up, Teofimo? How are you?
Doing great. Feeling like a champ. I'm excited.
So you were just telling me off air, you just got back from New York. And last we saw you in New York, you were shooting a video in front of Madison Square Garden, just reminding Vasily Lomachenko that was the spot that you were supposed to fight and that you were still ready to go. What was going on there?
Oh, yeah, man. I had swung out there in the city and, oh, man, seeing Madison Square Garden, I was like, that's where we were supposed to be at, and that's where we were supposed to fight. So I was like, you know what? Let me grab a video. Let me let him know, you know, this is where everything was going to happen. Happen. So, throwing a shot to him, and, you know, I think we got to him.
And, you noticed he responded in the comment there.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I think he needs to do better, though. I think he needs to talk to one of his guys from his social staff to hit with a better comeback. That wasn't that good.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't strong. It wasn't. It wasn't mm-hmm. kind of good trash talk we're getting used to in this sport. So just tell me now. You know, we've heard from Bob Arum a couple of times about the future of this fight. What is your latest information on that fight? When it could happen? Where it could happen? What do you know at this point?
Well, you know, Chris, from everything going on right now with the quarantine and everything with COVID, you know, Vegas right now is the spot for us to fight at. Bob Arum has, we've been talking about it, and he said anywhere from this week till next week, we should be finding out. We should be having contracts thrown at us, and we should be having everything signed and sealed. So that's the only thing we're waiting on now. And then after that, we're going to be in camp, and then everybody should expect. October 3rd is where Todd DeBuff feels very strongly that the fight will be made on. So, and speaking with my manager, David McWhorter, I mean, everything has been pretty much right there and then. So that's what we're waiting on, and I'm excited. I really am.
Are you going into this, Teofimo, thinking that your fight is probably going to take place inside that top rank bubble in Las Vegas, or are you holding out any hope that, you know, by October 3rd, there'll be enough, you know, enough room to have some fans in the stands for that fight?
I think that's where we're kind of a little like step back. That is pretty much be of trying to have the fans come in. You know, this fight, this magnitude of this type of fight, it needs to have fans. You know what I mean? And before all this, we had that already scheduled. You know, Madison Square Garden, sold out arena. You know, and so many big things happening, but COVID happened. COVID hit us. Mm. So now we're just trying to work around it. And I think that's what it is. We're just trying to see if we can get the fans in Nevada, in Vegas, and see if the state of commission from Nevada can actually allow at least a couple thousand fans to come in and tune in and watch live.
Was it hard for you to accept that, you know, knowing that you were going to have a sold out venue at the Garden, was it hard for you to accept that it was going to be something different, whether it's a couple thousand fans or no fans at all? Was that difficult for you to kind of grasp?
I think it's difficult for all of us. I mean, even the NBA players right now, you know, it's just a different atmosphere. It's just different all around. You know, this is what we're used to, you know, so I think now we just got to adjust to it. And, you know, we're true champions. So we're going to adjust to everything that's thrown at us. And, you know, with fans, no fans, you heard Loma, the little diva, you heard him. He said, he'll even fight in my yard. So it's all good. So, you know, we ain't worried about it.
Oh, no question about that. How do you balance training in a situation like this without a fight date and without kind of being able to target one specific date to get your body right for? How do you balance your training?
Literally just trying to put everything is mentally and physically. And everything what we're trying to do now and balancing is maintaining the weight, watching what we eat now, and then knowing the fight that we're about to have with the diva, the little diva, you know, I mean, that's the thing that is definitely what we're eyeing on now. So it's me and my father, we've been talking daily, you know, while I'm training. I mean, it's definitely different. I'm not in a boxing gym right now, but, you know, I'm able to still do the things that I'm able to do conditioning wise and strength and conditioning. That's really what I've been doing lately.
You know, do you have I was going to say, do you have to stay disciplined in terms of your weight? Like, do you, even though your fight is, you know, theoretically just, you know, 3 months off, are you trying mm-hmm. to stay within a certain range so you can, when it comes time, you can start the cut down?
Oh, absolutely. You know, right now we're in the high 40s. You know, this is something that is definitely, we're good at weight right now. You know, if you know boxing, then you know 10 pounds is not nothing in the sport of boxing to drop. So that's where we're at right now. And I'm very happy about it. You know, I'm very content. And I know that we're going to have a successful camp again.
Are you planning to do anything different going into this camp? I mean, I don't know how, are you going to be able to have sparring partners for this camp? Are you going to have to go to a different location for this camp?
Yeah. You know, my last camp was in New Jersey. This time around, we're probably going to be doing it in Big Bear, California. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, trying to get the sparring partners the best that we can get, you know, during this whole quarantine and COVID and pretty much, you know, knock this fucker out, because that's the main thing that's where I am on.
Bob Arum has said that, you know, a couple of months ago, he offered you and Lomachenko a chance to fight kind of one-off tune-up fights, and both of you said you didn't want that. Now that it's the bubble is done for at least the next few weeks, do you wish you did it? Are you happy with your decision not to take a tune-up fight?
don't know, I'm happy, you know, and I'm very content with that. That's one fight that we were definitely definitely putting our mind into, you know, and that was the fight that we said that would be made in 2020. So that was my next fight. You know, that was my first priority. It was making that fight happen. And, you know, with everything that happened and occurred, you know, but we told Bob, and I told him straight up, I said, hey, I'm not going to have a tuna fight. He is my tuna fight. And that's really what it was.
You know, when you, with all this time off, I mean, do you watch a lot of his old fights? I mean, do you do anything with all this time? Do you do anything to prepare even more for this fight?
Honestly, you know, I'm not going to lie. I am definitely, my hands have been itching more. You know, I've been wanting to go back in the ring and fight. So I think, honestly, watching Tuesdays and Thursdays of Top Rank and ESPN throwing out the shows for, you know, pretty much in the bubble, you know, I've been watching that and it's been making me pretty much anxious. Yes. So throwing out a video like that, throwing shots at the Diva and everything. I mean, it was great. It was great doing it. And just want to make this fight happen for all the fans and for myself.
What did you think of the 2 months Top Rank spent with those bubble shows?
I think it was fantastic. I think it definitely different. That's for sure. Definitely different. You could definitely hear the fighters actually throwing their punches and everything that they're doing. You could hear the coaches on their side clearly. And, you know, definitely you could tell it's quiet. It's quieter. they have this thing with the hear me cheer now and stuff like that. So kind of have some fans to throw out there. And so you could hear them too. But overall, I think that it's definitely different. But if all the fighters could do it and they're not complaining, why should we?
When you see how many fights that Top Rank lost because of coronavirus, I mean, Jamel Herring twice had to cancel his fight because of positive tests. Has that made you take any more precautions in kind of your day-to-day life to make sure that you don't get affected by that?
Oh, absolutely. Just to see him, one of the, you know, he's a world champion and everything, and to know that he was so close to fighting again and boom, you know, get hit with positive testing. Michaela Mayer, I mean, there was other athletes in there, you know what I mean, and even coaches. So yeah, it definitely does bring some type of light where you're like, whoa, you know, I definitely got to be cautious here, you know, this is the real thing. And with me as a fighter having asthma and everything, it definitely is very scary.
Yeah, I mean, pre-existing kind of condition that could certainly potentially affect you adversely. I mean, do you try to stay in as much as possible? I mean, you know, in that video you posted, obviously wearing a mask, New York City is one of the most, one of the cities that are very strong on people wearing masks. I mean, are there other things you try to do specifically to not, you know, put yourself in harm's way?
Just keep our, you know, practice social distancing and pretty much wash our hands as many times as we're able to around when we're around outside and we're not home. You know, and that's really it. You know, the main thing is don't touch your face. We're just following protocols. Me as an athlete, we have to. You know, I'm pretty sure all the athletes around the world, we're trying to do our best, you know, and that's all we can do. You know, everyone outside of it, you know, we want them to participate as well. There is some out there doing it and there's some that are not, you know. And but eventually, I hope this all blows over and we're able to have the fans come back. We're able to bring all the sports back in a normal schedule and just pretty much have just a great show and a great year.
You know, you talked about your weight being good for this fight. Do you still look at this fight as being your last at 135 no matter what? Or if something big comes along, whether it's Tank Davis or, you know, Ryan Garcia, if something big comes along, would you stay at 135 for one more fight?
Oh, absolutely. I think that with the Richard Comey fight, you know, I made weight so very, very, very easy. You know, and I didn't expect it to be that easy. So I know that I could definitely make 135 again, very smooth. And absolutely, again, you know, I have perfecting athletes. They're great women that they definitely know how to nutrition your body and make sure that you have all the nutrients that you need for your brain and for your body. So that's something that I love about them, you know, and I can't wait. You know, I just need to make sure that the little diva is not hiding in Egg's guest room. You know, in his guest house and during this quarantine, because he's out there right now, you know. People think he's in Ukraine. He's not, man. He's in L.A. You know, he's back.
I see you trying to make Little Diva stick on him, and it's effective. It's effective there. But what do you think, Teofimo, of what's going on at 135 right now? A lot of good fighters, young fighters, right in your age bracket, kind of yapping at each other back and forth. I mean, who knows when or if all those fights can happen, but it's certainly exciting to see really quality young fighters under the age of 25 in and around the same weight class.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have Shakur Stevenson, you have Devin Haney, Brian Garcia, Tank Davis. I mean, the list goes on and on. These guys all have some type of attribute that makes the fans want to see them more, you know? So I'm very happy to be in that, you know, in that era now. And we're definitely, you know, Teofimo is definitely the one that's going to take over. And how we're going to start it is just with this guy right here, you know, October 3rd, Teofimo versus the Diva, you know, we're going to do our thing.
Yeah. What have you thought of, you know, with Tank Davis fighting Leo Santa Cruz? I mean, he's a kind of a money man in that division. If you win those titles, you're going to be the money man in that division. Is that a fight that interests you down the line, or is another one of those guys more on your radar?
Who, me and Fat Tank?
Okay. You're pretty good with the nicknames there, Teofimo, I got to tell you.
Me and Fat Tank. Yeah, absolutely. That'd definitely be one. He can't even make our weight class, so I don't think he can make the weight at 130. And if he does, he's going to be dry, very dry. But we'll have to wait and see. You know, let's see if Fat Tank, we'll see if he'd be able to make the weight. And then we can talk about that. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask, before I let you go, you know, a lot of people kill time in different ways during this pandemic, whether it's watching Netflix all day. I mean, you obviously work out every day to try to keep yourself in shape, but that probably leaves like 18 hours left in the day to figure out what to do. You're down in Arkansas right now. What does Teofimo Lopez do to kill the time when you can't go out and about that often?
Honestly, you know, I'm able to play basketball, do anything hobby-wise, sports, and that's the type of person I am. My hobbies are football, basketball. Tune into Tuesdays and Thursdays when they had Top Rank had those boxing shows going on. Boxing is back. You know, now the NBA is back. That's something I'm definitely going to be tuning in now, you know, and I'm very excited about that. You know, it's been a long time since we had sports, you know, and for someone that does sports all the time, you know, I'm very excited about it. And it's a great turnaround, and I could definitely see the light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, and pretty much puzzles, anything to keep my mind sharp. And on top of that, you know, just enjoying the outdoors and enjoying the time that I do have with my wife and my family.
As someone that has watched this week NBA games behind closed doors for the first time, that's weird too. Let me tell you, it's very strange to see, you know, the PA announcer say, please welcome the Brooklyn Nets, and nobody cheer for them. It's a very strange, the new reality to Teofimo is very strange out there right now.
I bet it is, but hey, I mean, if they could do it, we all could do it. You know what I mean? So, I think what we come to terms is that it may not be like this the whole time. I think we might find that light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you before, real quick. You mentioned that hopefully in the next week or so, you're going to get some contracts for that Lomachenko fight. Are you anticipating that process will go smoothly? Are you expecting any speed bumps when it comes to what a new contract will look like?
Well, you know, you always want to come into, hopefully, like, thinking that it's going to come out smoothly, you know, but we know that we need to expedite this fight. We need to make sure that we make this done. You know, we got to make sure that we have everything and we don't take long and during this process. You know, if they give us a contract earlier next week, we should be having it done by the end of this week, you know, and have it finalized, sent out, and then boom, you know, I'm taking the next plane to California and going to Big Bear, you know, so, or driving out there, who knows, but you know what I mean? So that's where my mind is at right now. And I'm pretty sure we're going to have it very smoothly. I think that Top Rank, ESPN, they know what I want. They know what we're eyeing on. And, you know, I should expect that.
Yeah, I hope that works out. And hopefully it all comes together very quickly so you can have a big fight to announce on October 3rd. Teofimo, glad to see you're staying safe out there, man. Hopefully next time we talk, it's going to be days in advance of the biggest fight of the year, you versus Lomachenko in Las Vegas, man. Good luck out there, man. And thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, and see you soon, Chris.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.